Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to the show. So happy you're tuning in to Dose of Leadership. Equity Bank sponsored podcast today. David English is on the show. He's a vice president at a company called AdTrend Outdoor Advertising. It was really fun to talk to him. I didn't know much about billboard advertising, outdoor advertising. And you would think it was based on, if you're not a layman or not involved in the from an outsider looking in, that this is a industry that's on its way down and dying. But David proved to me that wrong, that it's not. It's actually growing, plenty of opportunities, and particularly the way that you look at this business. I love his mindset, his ability to kind of pivot, and the entrepreneurial mindset. And again, his ideas about leadership are worthy of note. He is an experienced sales manager. He's a sales leader. He's consistently increased revenue, decreased costs, and improved the quality of the work environment with his positive attitude, the way he looks at leadership. His experience of management, of growing sales and sales groups. He's built sales by focusing on the customer first, which makes sense. An exemplary customer service. It's one of his pet peeves is customer service, which again attributes to his success and all a building block to leading him to be the type of leader he is now. And he's got experience both in the corporate environment and the entrepreneurial front, running small businesses, gives him that foundation, that well-rounded understanding of business and leadership in general. And I get that is, from my takeaway from the conversation, is the reason why he is successful in this, what he's doing. And he's the type of leader that we talk about here exclusively on Dose of Leadership, the type of leadership we're trying to become. And that's what I got out of this conversation. He's got experience wearing many hats. And again, I think a requirement of leadership is the ability to wear different types of hats, pivot, know what your strengths are. And that's another thing I noticed about talking with David is self-awareness, knowing what he's good at, knowing what he's not. And he plays in the strength zone, which we talk about on the show. It's so critical that you play in your strength zone. Be aware. Self-awareness is so critical in leadership. That's one thing that David seems to understand as well. His understanding of how to efficiently run a business as a proven track record of success, and it allows him to see success year after year. And I really think you're going to get a lot out of this conversation, getting into his mindset and to see what it takes and how all of us can improve in our leadership ability. That's David English. He's a great example. All right, this show is brought to you by Equity Bank. Proud to have Equity Bank sponsor this series, going on almost 20 months now. And Equity Bank is certainly a bank that understands what it means to efficiently run a business. They really do cater towards that entrepreneur or someone who's working in business. They know what it's like. They understand the trials and tribulations. And it's been exciting to watch them grow into one of the fastest growing banks in the Midwest. They're now listed on the NASDAQ exchange. They got locations all across Kansas, as well as Oklahoma, Missouri, and Arkansas. And clearly this team at Equity Bank, in my opinion, knows how to lead for growth. And so if it feels like your current bank is just kind of more of a follower, they don't really understand your situation, and you want to work with a bank that really understands your needs, then check out my friends at Equity Bank. Go to equitybank.com to learn more. Thanks for listening. Now let's join our conversation with David English, the vice president at AdTrend Outdoor and Advertising, here on Dose of Leadership. David, thanks for coming on the show. Welcome to Dose of Leadership.
Hey, you know, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I love your podcast. I've been listening for a while.
It means a lot. I know we were talking before the recording that you'd listen to the podcast. You're a podcaster yourself, but you and I were both talking about the power of podcasting. I love it. I think it's a great way to connect. And you seem like a connector based on looking at your past and a little bit talking to you in this pre-recording. How important are relationships to you?
I think they're essential for everything. I mean, I think that if you don't have a solid group of connections, and if you're not continually making connections along the way, it's just you get kind of stagnant. I mean, you've got to have those solid relationships in your life, but you've got to be okay reaching out and saying, hey, you know, sir, or Matt, ma'am, and you're someone I want to meet. You have information I want to know, and you've got to put yourself out.
Yeah. So has sales always been your passion? You seem like you're very successful at it. You've been certainly a track record of sales success, and then but now you're also managing and developing sales leaders. How did you get involved in it?
Yeah, I don't know that sales was always my passion. I just always knew I had a knack for developing relationships with people and being able to, you know, explain a kind of what's going on in the world and why, you know, what I'm offering is a good option. I enjoy meeting people and getting to know them on a pretty deep level. But, you know, since I found myself up here in Kansas City, getting close with people and meeting people has been really important.
So how did it start for you? Obviously, you know, always listen to the foundation where it started. You grew up in a small Kansas in Eureka.
Yeah.
And you eventually made it to Kansas City. What was the dream then? I mean, you grow up there. A lot of times people stay there. You wanted to get out like most of us do and experience the world. What was the foundation like there?
You know, I loved Eureka. It was really great. It was fun, a really good place to grow up. And I have three younger brothers who are scattered throughout small town Kansas still. And I just had a feeling at a young age that I just wanted something more. I remember trips to Kansas City as a family being in awe with, you know, what a big city could offer. And I remember, you know, making a point to read about, you know, different options and different careers and different ways of life that maybe a big city could offer that, you know, a small community doesn't. It was just something inside of me that said, you've got to get out of here, go to college and, you know, appreciate where you're from. But I mean, my goodness, there's a lot more up here to offer. And it was just always something that pushed me to come.
Yeah. Come up here. That gnawing, right? I can certainly relate to that. And sometimes though, when I look back on wisdom, that gnawing that I always had, and I've talked to many leaders and my mentors, and they had that gnawing too. And it's a fine line because I found myself that gnawing sometime was a little bit ego driven, right? And insecurity. And then, but now sure. I've gotten to the point now where I see the gnawing is about making the place better than I found it. Does that resonate with you when I say that?
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't know what that gnawing was at the time. I mean, without sounding arrogant, I mean, I just kind of knew I was just maybe a little bit different and it was, I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It makes sense.
Looking back, I can see, okay, this is something that was just, it was something telling me you need to get out and go do something different. And that doesn't discredit where I'm from at all.
No.
I don't want to at all, but, yeah, I mean, it's just something.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, yeah, I guess I got to be careful when I say it because I know what you mean about coming across as being arrogant but I do think a lot of I think the vast majority of us are born with that gnawing. And I think sometimes though we settle and we tell ourselves, and again, the gnawing, when I say settle, your definition of significance is highly personalized, right? What you consider significant and success is totally defined by you, not by society, culture, and expectations, right? If you can get authentically in tune with that and clear, that's what I mean, that you need to follow that gnawing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, some people call it a calling. I mean, some people call it a mission in their life. I mean, there's a lot of definitions for it, but at the end of the day, there is something pulling me to run my own business and to be successful in a different kind of way. My family jokes, all of my brothers, their careers have led them to a place where they're serving others. If it's in the education world or if it's through the criminal justice world or whatever it may be, I'm just the greedy business guy who spends every day trying to learn how to make a buck. But it just kind of was always that way. Credit to them for, you know, going their direction towards what was calling them. But for me, it was always, you know, run your own business and find a way to be your definition of successful.
So here it is. Would you say that you've met your expectations, your goals, or where you want to go? I mean, I don't think we ever fully arrived. So that's my next question then. Where are you taking this? Where do you see yourself as you were constantly shifting and morphing and listening to that inner voice? And where do you want to take this? I mean, if you could look forward, what are you trying to achieve now, you think?
You know, it's funny. I remember a conversation I had as a young kid with my father, and he and I are very close. I love him to death. And I told him my goal in life was to have two things, a very, very happy marriage with kids and a happy family, and, you know, have that loving family that my family has. But I wanted to do it so that money wasn't an object.
Right.
And I was financially secure so that I could raise my family in an environment that was different than, you know, how I was raised. He challenged me at that point. I credit him for doing it in a very positive way. He challenged me and pushed me, explained to me how difficult that would be. I am not there. I have a happy family. I've got two great boys and a wife that, you know, does a phenomenal job with them. But, you know, there's always that end game, and I'm always kind of pushing myself to get to that next level.
Well, and that's what I find fascinating, because I am too. And then sometimes, and I've talked about this on the show with all transparency, 12 years ago, I got sidetracked, you know, because I don't like the term work-life balance. I think that's a myth. I think it's always about priorities, right? And sometimes the family, the kids have to sacrifice because the priority is this, and vice versa, right? And I think if you can look at life that way, that it's a series of priorities, then the game becomes, okay, I need to make sure what is the priority, right? And it's different than trying to balance work and life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I mean, wouldn't you say, though, in addition to that, like, once you know what your priorities are, if those priorities are working 80 hours a week to earn a huge paycheck, or spending as much time at home with family and kids as you want, or somewhere in between, once you know what those priorities are, doesn't that create that work-life balance that so many people use as a cliche phrase?
I think you're right. I think you're right. Yeah. But I think it's a shifting. The priority list is a living, breathing thing. Right.
Yeah. No, it changes all the time. I mean, I have different priorities now than I did when I was in my 20s or when I was in high school.
Yeah. And so for me, the key has become, and see, and I almost got divorced 12 years ago because I thought the priorities were this, but if I was completely honest, it was my ego. I was trying to satisfy the ego side of me. You know what I mean? Meaning that the hard stuff of dealing with the challenges with the family and the marriage was too hard. And it was easy when I was in the workplace where everybody was telling me how great I was, right? And mentors taking me and telling me how sharp I am. And then it starts going to my head. And then I do start working 70, 80 hours a week because that's what was feeding my ego. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think we are as a human race, human species, we are driven by that ego. And when you're pumped up and pumped up and told you're so good at your job and you're so great at this, and man, you're in line for promotion, you are naturally driven to, you know, embrace that. I mean, I think there's a chemical that is, I'm not a scientist, man, but I got a chemical that's released that says, and this is where you need to be. And I think that ego is really important to everyone.
Yeah, but I think it's, if you can become the awareness of when it's kind of taking over, and the awareness of, okay, what am I trying to do here? How can I add value? To me, the shift was when I started looking at it, okay, how can I add value in this transaction? You and I are working together, I'm brand new. Instead of worrying about myself, I go external and say, how can I help David in his business, right? I'm always constantly thinking, how can I add value? And not expecting anything in return. To me, that's the challenge. Because if I'm going, well, I'm going to do this for David so David will give me XYZ, then that's the ego. If I go, I'm just going to pour my life into David and his business because I care about him and I love what he's doing, I love being part of his team, right? And then all that stuff I was seeking anyway directly gets exponentially filled, if that makes sense. If I don't chase it directly and I go at it authentically with awareness and clarity, then all the stuff I was chasing anyway gets overflowing.
I think anybody who's achieved a certain level of success would echo you. And the idea that you have to speak, it's not about, how do I say this? It's not about working really, really hard and doing everything you can possibly to make money from a greedy standpoint. And if you come at relationships honestly and authentically, to use your word, you give back to the community. You are a genuine person in what you want to do. Good things follow you. I mean, yeah, and can find you at that point. You know, if it's anything from, you know, giving back to youths in the community, or you know, finding, you know, that charitable organization, or just diving into a company and helping them, you know, solve a problem in their supply chain. You know, those are all really important things to make a part of your life to create that balance.
And it's probably, if as a sales expert, I mean, I'm not one, but I mean, I've done sales. I still do sales. But I find if you look at the really tremendous, successful, significant sales people that we look up to, that's how they approach sales, right? They don't approach it as, you know,
they're not looking at a business transaction as, this is my commission that I'm going to
exactly
make. I'm going to take on this much money. And they can look at it fully and say, this is my relationship with Richard. He is, you know, doing this for a living, and this is how I can help him out the best. And over time, to play the long game, you're going to come out more successful doing it that way.
For sure. Yeah. So how old, can I ask how old you are?
What 38.
38. 38. What would you tell yourself, the 18, you know, 20 years back, looking back with this kind of, that 20 years of wisdom and looking at, oh, this is where I've gone to and arrived and looking for this where I'm going. What advice would you have given yourself at 18? As you're starting out?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was, and people who know me would laugh when I say this now, but I was such a quiet person for a long time. And I, you know, we moved in the middle of high school and I didn't adjust well to that. And I was really, you know, poor at making friends. And I would look at that person and just tell them, you know, you come out of that shell a little bit and have a little bit more confidence in who you are, and, you know, find an interest in other people opposed to, you know, being so consumed with, you know, who you are and who you want to be, because there's a lot of good you can do in the world, but you just come out of that shell a little bit.
That is the challenge of being an introvert, right? And do you consider yourself an introvert now still? Are you an
introvert? Not now.
Not now?
No, not at all. I'm very extroverted now, but I didn't used to be.
Yeah.
I used to be very quiet and, you know, building relationships were a challenge for me. Back in, you know, late teens, early 20s.
And is it one of your favorite things now to do, is to build relationships? Like, no, we talked about that in the beginning, but do you look forward to that, I guess? Or there's a level of anxiety still? If you're at a networking event, do you feel anxious or do you feel excited?
I am at my best in a small group or one-on-one.
Yeah.
I'm a member of a handful of networking groups where you get 300 people into a room, and I don't think that, unless you're really intentional about that, a lot of positives can come out of it.
I'm with you. Yeah.
How can you build a really close relationship with someone when there are 298 people trying to do the same thing? But you put me in a, I really enjoy being in a room with 5 or 6, 10, 12 people. And, you know, you can really accomplish something really, really, really impactful that way.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one too. I relate to what you're saying, because the same way, I think, I don't know if I was a shy kid. I wasn't shy all that much, but I was definitely introverted. I'm still more of an introvert than I am an extrovert. I can be extroverted. I love getting up on stage. I love speaking. I love meeting new people, but I'm with you. I'm more of a relator than I am, hey, everybody look at me type, right?
I think it's important to really care about who you're talking to. And
yeah,
I think
I agree.
A relator can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You seem like a relator to me. I think it just seems like that. I can just tell by the way you talk and the things that you're passionate about. Yeah, I can get that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, we're about halfway through the conversation, but I wanted to take the time to talk about my good friends, the sponsor here of this special series at Equity Bank. Have you ever noticed that most business bankers seem to really understand just one thing? It's banking, right? And not a lot about business. It makes sense, since most banks were built generations ago and now they're often run by caretakers, not business builders. Well, it's not the case here at Equity Bank. The bankers at Equity Bank didn't inherit a bank generations ago. They built one of their own. They know that building something takes expertise, vision, and hard work. And over the past decade, they've built one of the region's fastest growing banks by working side by side with customers, with entrepreneurs, with leaders in communities all throughout Kansas, Missouri, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. Recently, Equity Bank was listed on the NASDAQ exchange, which gives them even greater capabilities to take on those big deals that growing businesses need to keep on growing. So if you're tired of talking to bankers who've never really ran or owned or built a business, then I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised when you talk to my friends at Equity Bank. Thanks for listening to this show. Let's get back to the conversation, this unique and special series on leadership and entrepreneurship brought to you by my friends at Equity Bank. So what are the challenges as you know, you've been a successful sales manager, sales leader? Did you even consult on that? Did I read that right? Were you, when you consulted in your business, is that what you focused on? Was it sales or was it more advertising?
Well, both. I run the largest locally owned billboard company here in Kansas City with, you know, about 200 billboards. There are a lot of, you know, most of the KC Metro and, St. Joe and Topeka and you know, a few other small communities. I also have a consulting company where I work with businesses that are and are not billboard clients, work with them on their day-to-day consulting through their some of their needs that maybe aren't related to advertising at all. We have, during the advertising process, found a bottleneck in their company, maybe personnel problems, maybe something else, a supply chain breakdown, and we've worked through that with them. And it's allowed me to take the billboard business and turn it into a consulting business as well.
Yeah. The billboard business fascinates me because it seems like, and again, I don't know much about it. I have a friend of mine who's has a buddy that's trying to, and I don't know the guy, but one of my best friends through life, he's getting recruited by a billboard guy down here in Wichita. And so I know just on the surface about the business, but it seems like it's one of those businesses that regardless of what's happening from the technology front, it's almost immune because everybody's still, there's only more and more people driving, right? I mean, I don't know. Speak to me a little bit about that. How much is, I don't know, the social media revolution of the last 15 years, particularly, has impacted the billboard business?
Well, and the, absolutely, I will. The social media revolution has impacted everyone everywhere.
So sure.
To say it hasn't changed our business at all is completely false. But it has turned into a situation where marrying the lack of technology that a static billboard offers and all that social media can do, those two medias work really well hand in hand together.
Yeah.
And, how the consulting company that I have took flight was doing just that. We started geofencing our billboards. We started running campaigns socially, promoting the boards and using the billboards themselves in areas that we're targeting with our social media, so that we can reach the customer at home while they are on their, you know, computer or cell phone or tablet, but we can also reach them during their commute to work. And we can accomplish that with two medias that are very, very different, but they work very, very well together.
Yeah, I see that. I guess I never really looked at it that way, but I mean, I can see how that makes sense, particularly if you can geofence it and you can tie it together from what you're seeing on the screen. And then,
I can take a billboard, run a campaign on it for, let's say, a car dealership, and then I can use technology, the social media and mobile marketing. I can geofence the billboard and the car dealership, as well as the zip codes around the billboard, and reach that person on their morning commute, but also reach them at home on their tablet. And then what's great about it is we turn around by geofencing the car dealership. We can find out if someone within our target base has gone to the dealership.
That's cool. Yeah.
We're able to, you know, communicate differently with, you know, this said car dealer than we have ever been able to before.
That's cool.
I mean, it's fun. I mean, we have a lot of fun with it. It's allowed us to have different conversations with customers. And again, I mean, any small business owner is in need of somebody, in my opinion, who can give them an honest approach about marketing, because any joker can come through and say, you know, this is what's best for you. I just think if we're honest in our approach, it's better for everyone.
Well, absolutely. But I think it shows me, and again, I don't know how much of this has been intentional on your part, but the ability to pivot as things are changing. And that's kind of what I meant about when you look at billboards, it's one of those, it doesn't necessarily have to go away. It's just kind of pivoting and changing and combining with what's there. It can make for a pretty powerful combination.
Yeah, it's not going away. It's not going the way that the newspaper has.
Right. Or magazines. Yeah.
No, I mean, and it's a media that is nationally been increasing from a revenue standpoint year over year. And the campaigns are getting longer. I mean, it's a solid media right now. People really like the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
Because there's so much out there that's not simple, including what I just described about the car dealer, that is, people like the simplicity a lot.
Well, and plus plus with the technology now, you're able to give some value to your client and say, well, hey, look, this was effective because of this, where 15, 20 years ago, you couldn't have done that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you've got some of the digital boards that you guys, you know, see around. I know there's a lot of them in Wichita. We have plenty of them in Kansas City. They can do some really unbelievable things, including, you know, campaigns that can read emblems on cars and change the message based on that. And you can change your message based on the weather or, you know, how long the wait is at the emergency room. So there's some really cool things you can do with some of the digital boards.
I saw something, and this isn't necessarily related to billboards, but I saw Delta Airlines is going to unveil, and I don't quite understand this technology, but it's on some of the, as passengers are getting off their plane and somehow it's reading their phones and it knows. And so you and I, say you're going to San Francisco and I'm going to Poughkeepsie, and we just got off this flight, we're both would be looking at the board, and we would only see our own our own connecting information. So even though you and I are looking at the same thing, you would see something different than I'm seeing.
That's awesome.
I don't know how that works, but it's proven technology, and they're going to enroll it here in one of these in Atlanta in the next couple of years.
That's cool. What's up moving the Minority Report?
I know, right?
I love stuff like that. I know a lot of people look at it and they hesitate because of the Big Brother aspect or whatever. But I just figure that's the way a lot of technology is going. You might as well jump on board.
Yeah.
Because there's so much you can do, and there's so many, you know, so much capability. It's just great.
I follow a lot of the tech kind of investors and mentors who are looking way ahead, you know, and I like the guys that look at it at a positive angle instead of the doom and gloom. I mean, there's good in the, with that advancement, there's a potential for evil and bad, but there's also the potential for exponential good as well. And I love listening to those guys, and some of them, I mean, they think this next 10 years, just, you know, it's even difficult to look back 10 years from now in 2010, and it's looks a little different than 2020, but they said the difference between 2030 and 2020 is going to be exponential compared to 2020 and 2010.
Oh, it's heading that way. I mean, like I said earlier, I have two young boys, and they're, you know, 3 and 1, and they're going to grow up in a world where technology is such a driving force in their life. If I don't get on board with it, I'm going to just be lost.
So stay ahead of it. Yeah. So what is it as you're looking forward? I asked you kind of look back. So now let's look at the other 20. Where do you want to be when you're 58, approaching 60? What are you kind of steering towards now?
You know, I really see the consulting company and what we're doing from a mobile and geofencing standpoint taking off. I think that, you know, I've always had that urge to, you know, 100% call my own shots, be my own boss, and run the world as I see it. And I think that's the direction things are going to go. The technology, as it changes, we want to definitely stay on top of that stuff, so we're aware of what's going on and what that next cutting edge part of mobile media is. You know, I think that's where I'm being tugged to next, if you want to bring the conversation full circle.
Yeah. And what is the, what, if you could look at that, if you could say, what does a significant life look like for David English, do you think, as you're getting near the end?
You know, I think it goes back a lot to that, that original comment I made to my dad and the challenge he put forth. I want to continue to have that happy life with the wife and the kids and, have that successful part of, the family. And then, continue to work to make sure that money's not that object and not an object that we're stressed about on a regular basis and find a way to make that happen so that we can live a life where, we're, as a family, as a group, as a company, we're really in a good spot. And I think that's a challenge worth going for.
Amen. As we wrap up here, I like a fun little question. I used to do this quite a bit. I haven't done this in a long time, but if you could have one night where you could have dinner with five people, live or dead, just to have this fascinating conversation, who would those five people be?
I have not heard you ask that on a podcast.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a few years. I used to ask it all the time, but it's a fun one.
Alive or dead, I would love to sit down with my guy, Bill Self at KU.
Oh, cool.
I'd want my father with me. I think including, Martin Luther King Jr. In there would be fun. And I think that, I'm at three now. I've got two more. God, I don't know. Let's go with, Abraham Lincoln.
Good choice.
And, what's a good philosopher from back in the day? Someone who, is not around anymore. Not a Gandhi type personality, but someone similar, someone who just, looked at the world maybe a little bit differently than.
Well, you could go big. You could go either the Buddha, you could go with Jesus Christ. You could go with
Jesus. Let's go with Jesus Christ. That's a good one. We'll just get the whole mix going in. And that's we got to kick Bill Self off that table, we can.
Well, you got to have, I think that's a good mix. You got to have your dad there. Everybody, and you'd be surprised how many people, almost everybody invariably has one family member on there, which I think is cool. Yeah. It says a lot about the individual, I think. Having Bill Self there, I think there's nothing wrong with that, right? That's someone that and I think he would add to the conversation, right? Because he would be just as excited about your list like you. And so you two could probably feed off each other. You know what I mean? So I think he would add to the conversation. Man, having Martin Luther King, that would be huge. That would be great.
Be great. I would love to see how he sees sees the world now.
And, yeah, I've thought of that too.
Where it was, I would love his take on it. And then having him and Abe Lincoln there at the same time, I think they would love to, because they're both very high minded, philosophy oriented people as well.
Yeah, but then the kicker is you got Jesus at the table. Would he dominate the conversation? He probably wouldn't, but he would. Everybody would be paying attention to him, right? Everybody would be looking at him, including Abe and Martin Luther. Everybody would be like, "Oh my gosh!" And it would be up to him. Jesus would have to do something to break the ice, so everybody wouldn't be so nervous.
He would be. You'd be at the head of the table. I think there would be interesting conversations.
Yeah, that'd be great. I like that list. That's a good list. I like it. Very cool, man. Anyway, it's kind of fun. It just kind of shows what people value. Would you believe it or not? And I never played this interview. I did that question with a guy. This is about 3 or 4 years ago. And a guy without hesitating, and he will remain nameless, but he, and I never aired this interview, but he without hesitation, he said, Adolf Hitler.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, okay, well, I can see why. Can I ask why? And I thought it would be, well, because I'd ask him, why was he such a maniac and blah, blah, where did it go wrong? And he actually said, well, love him or hate him. And I'm like, well, who loves him? And it just kept getting worse. And he's just like, because I just want to understand his leadership, blah, blah, blah. He started, and I'm like, dude, I was like, do you really? Anyway, it was
so
bad.
You said that you haven't asked that question for a very long time. And then you shared with me the story of this gentleman who's nameless. Is he the reason you stopped asking the question?
I think it was kind of, that was one of the reasons. I think shortly thereafter, I stopped using it. And then, I think I remember I got some feedback, I think from a listener saying, hey, enough with that. Or, not that that was the driver. I mean, that was just one person, but I thought, well, maybe I'll just mix it up. And it was fun. I did it there for, I did it for about 8 months to a year, and it was fun. And we got some great, and I would never tell the person I was going to.
Yeah.
Even if they had like a list of things like, hey, because sometimes people are like, well, what are you going to ask me? And I'm like, well, let's just have a natural conversation. It's going to be in this umbrella framework, but I'd always spring it on them regardless. And it was
I with my small little podcast that I have, I have a listener that is from Norway, and this podcast is dedicated to Kansas City. I mean, it's not, I don't know why the individual, it's a lady, and why she's listening to the podcast in the first place. I appreciate it, but you talk about listener feedback. I will get 3 to 4 emails from her every time I publish an episode.
Isn't that crazy?
And they're all, you know, genuinely good questions. I appreciate it. I always respond. She's so nice. I have yet to muster up the, I don't know if strength is the right word, but the curiosity to ask her, why are you even listening to this?
Because you should.
You must have some kind of Kansas City ties. It's the only reason it makes sense.
I would ask her. Yeah. That's just, it's awesome. I mean, that's the power of podcasting and connecting. And that's why I love doing it. And a similar thing happened to me long, 3 or 4 years ago. And I was like, I could see the downloads. I could see the people that are listening to the show. And I was like, wow, there's a lot of people listening. But I wasn't hearing from anybody. And then just kind of when I was low, the universe kind of reached out. And I got this email just out of the blue about a guy in South Africa. And he had a small team of 7 or 8 individuals and some business, some small business in South Africa. And every Wednesday night they would, you know, get order in food, pizza or something. And they sit around and they listen to my show. And then they have a discussion about it. And I was like, what?
Isn't that great? And that's so cool.
Wow. So it's just kind of cool to do it. And even though, I didn't get anything directly from him, but he certainly filled the emotional bank about me doing this. Right. So,
yeah, cool. I love it.
This has been a fun conversation, David. How can people get in touch with you, learn more about you and AdTrend? How can people reach out to you?
You know, I think the best place, I'll send them to the same place I do for my podcast. And that's dEnglish@ad-trend.com. That's my work address. It's where I'm most accessible. I'm all over, LinkedIn, of course. You can find me there too. English is, just how it sounds. So, I'd love to hear from anyone. And, I really appreciate coming on. You, before you reached out to me, I was listening to you, and it was, I really appreciate the ability to talk.
Well, it's been a fun one. I mean, I can tell you're one of the good ones, and I'm proud to have you in the Dose of Leadership circle. And I really appreciate you taking the time to come here. And it was a fun conversation. Thanks for coming on.
Likewise, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to this special entrepreneurial and leadership series, The Dose of Leadership, brought to you by my friends at Equity Bank. Make sure to subscribe to Dose of Leadership, where you can hear more great stories in this unique and special series. If you're enjoying this podcast, please take a listen to all of my Dose of Leadership podcasts, all of my episodes, and see why Fortune, Entrepreneur, and Inc. Magazine all recommend this as a must listen. Dose of Leadership features candid conversations with amazing guests, leading high-performing experts and organizations, large and small, all over the world. Find Dose of Leadership on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, and go ahead and visit doseofleadership.com, where you can find out more information about the show, myself, my speaking engagements, my keynotes, live seminars, and my mastermind events. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great day.